Warning, the movies we brought on today's episode have sexual assault and racial violence content. This is an adult podcast made by adults for adults. Racist white men and their colonial massacres, some state of nature reducing everything to violence talk, just an overall kind of dark podcast. But that's not so bad. We diversify on Fake Film Fans.
Welcome to Fake Film Fans. I'm Suede Best, and I love League of Legends.
Hey, everyone. I'm Walter, and I'm slightly pissed off because I suck at first-person shooters. And I just came out losing because I made terrible decisions and could not aim and could not move and could not do anything. And it was all my fucking fault.
Dude, all right. Can I be honest with you? Before that we were recording this, I was telling Walter that I got mad at my dad last night and I kind of lost my temper. And I'm a little ashamed to admit part of that came from the fact that I was playing the new WWE 2K game and I played it for about an hour and I couldn't beat the first guy in it. I just couldn't beat it. I was like so pissed. I was so pissed off. And I mean, other stuff was happening, but that was the thing that like put me in a bad mood that like had me open to like being an asshole. So I was the like fucking edgy teen last night because I was losing at my fucking video game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I got nothing to respond.
What do you mean you don't know?
I feel like you're having a rough, that's all. Like, everything in your life is so hard right now, so.
It's true. I mean, all my bones are falling out. All my bones are falling out of my body. I have wiggly bonitis. There's all the tornadoes in Roanoke. All the tornadoes have been happening.
Hasn't there been, like, a really big gumball machine too?
Yeah, there's a giant gumball machine that's been stomping around Roanoke, trapping people in chewed gum. My girlfriend Chinpo.
I didn't know you had a girlfriend.
Yeah, Chinpo Maria Delgado. She's beautiful. She's got two teeth and one eye.
So isn't that good news? Why is that bad news?
It's bad news that she got captured by the giant gumball machine.
I thought it was bad news because it's, you know, all the exes you've had, you're with them, but you don't want to be with them, but you are with them.
Uh-oh. Not only are we recycling jokes, but we're going to spicy territory. Shout out to my exes. I don't know, Walt, like, you really want to play Gardic Phone, and you, like, don't want to play these first-person shooters.
I just want to play games with, like, people, yeah, and I want, like, a community to play games with, but I don't know, I got into gaming really late, so I didn't exactly use my teenage life to build up a Discord channel or Discord community to find people to play games with. Actually, you know what else happened? A lot of my forums that I used to use for the communities for like manga and movies, they've shut down because of Facebook. I mean, Facebook is now getting destroyed by other websites slowly and slowly. But when Facebook first came out, everyone thought Facebook was so fucking cool.
Yeah, I remember having a Facebook.
Yeah, but everyone who fucking was using Facebook were normies and they didn't know how to use the internet properly. So they didn't realize how fucking Facebook gentrified the internet space by destroying... Gentrified is probably not the right word, but Facebook legit
destroyed. I like it. We're sticking with space. It gentrified it. It did. It was urban renewal.
Yeah, and all these normies suddenly were like, what the fuck? You can talk to other people on the internet?
I don't play a lot of video games with people, to be honest. Video games are usually like my end of the day, Suede is alone situation.
Yeah, that's the other thing that's like interesting. You definitely like actually having alone time. And while I usually think I am a loner, it's not like I actually want to do my activities alone. It's more that I want to do activities that I want to do, and if you want to join it or not join it, you have to do what I want. So it ends up making me a loner, because it ends up mean most people don't want to fucking do what I want, so I'm just like, all right, I'm gonna do it alone.
You're like, I want to eat sand. And if no one's gonna eat sand with me, that's fine. But I want to do it, and it would be great if people join me. Meanwhile, I'm like sitting there hidden in a cave eating sand by myself, because I want to eat sand by myself.
And a lot of times the activities that you like to do socially, unless I'm drunk, they're not things I like to do.
Yep. Yeah, because I like to spend time outside. I mean, I'm not like going around playing football or whatever, but like if I'm gonna like do something with a friend, what I usually want to do is like go to a park and like sit and just like talk shit and like walk around the park, and like maybe there's like a swing that we can sit on, or like there's a creek that we can like put our feet in or whatever.
That's not like just you. Like most of the people I've met in Hong Kong are like that. Like they think that like a together activity has to be going out and talking shit. I'm down to do that, but I just don't want to do that each fucking time, so that it make, like if everyone only wants to go out and talk in a park, and because everyone needs to recharge alone, it makes it so that no one has time to talk shit over a video game, which pisses me off a lot.
I think the other problem is it's like hard to do inside stuff right now because of the sort of ongoing unpleasantness, right? Like I have two groups of people I see inside, can like hang out with because I know they're like doing safe COVID practices. But like a lot of my like quote video game friends that like I used to have, like I just can't be inside with them because they're like too much of chuckleheads to trust that they're not gonna like, you know, go to some dumb party or something and then bring back COVID.
Yeah, but video games, playing with video games with people online is like online. It's not even like they have to be there.
Well, I don't spend money for online games with the exception of my Nintendo machine.
That's what's so wild to me. I mean, not you. These people rather spend like $500 on fucking two whiskey bottles than spend $500 on 10 online games. And then even if one sucks, it doesn't even fucking matter. It's still cheaper than a goddamn two whiskey bottles. You could just buy like, I don't know, $5 of alcohol inside your house and then drink, get super smashed and fucking shoot people and throw up while you're shooting someone on accident and be like, sorry, this is why we lost, because I'm covered in vomit. So much more fun.
How good is a $500 whiskey bottle in comparison to a Kentucky Gentleman?
I mean, it's good. It's super good. The problem is alcohol only tastes good when you're sober. So when you're fucking wasted, it actually doesn't make a difference.
Now, you know what I think is really weird is about video games and playing online. When you and I are having this conversation right now, I'm within the context of my own room. Like I can hear the birds outside. My focus is on you and our conversation, but like I can also feel like I'm sitting in my bed right now, so I can like feel my blankets and stuff like that I like, you know, use to keep warm at night. So there's still this focus on reality as what it is. But when you're playing an online game with someone, especially something like Apex Legends, which we've played before, you get so sucked into the reality of the game that it's almost like jarring. Like you almost like forget that there's a physical space. Like it's like a pseudo alternate it's a pseudo virtual reality, because you're so focused that you like lose track of everything but the online game. And it's like a little disconcerting to me, but I feel like you would be like, no, that's good. We need to go one step further though and all wear VR headsets while we do it, right?
I mean, I'd be fucking down with that, yeah. I mean, disconcerting is an interesting way to put it. I wouldn't say I disagree. I just think having a really fucking great moment with your friends, with or without alcohol, you go to like a park and then you have to come back to your home anyways. I think that moment can be disconcerting too.
Oh, see, this says something about us. Because there is nothing better. Like, I love my friends. For instance, let's talk about Celine. Like, when I hang out with Celine, we do, like, a 2-3-4 hour hang sesh. When I get to leave and, like, get in my car and smoke a cigarette and, like, drive home and it's, like, dark. That's, like, my jam right there. I'm, like, it's just me in my car now. Got the radio playing low. The windows are down. It's quiet. To me, it's not disconcerting. It's, like, a moment of, like, ah, finally, I get to be back with my own thoughts again. Even though, like, I'll say it again. I love hanging out with Celine, and I miss that she's not in Roanoke right now.
I mean, I think it's more about like you have a space of yourself that acts as a transitional sort of phase to leave. I think that's also why so many people who play video games like a fuck ton with friends, a lot of times when they finish playing video games, they don't just like peace out. They usually get on Discord calls and talk to each other. I should also clarify, it's not fucking video games. No, I just want more fucking diversity in my life. That's
you want
all.
More different hangouts.
Like, if I only could hang out in VR chat, I would not like it either. I just want to have different types of hanging out. It's just, hanging out is everyone's happy place and comfort zone. So what ends up happening is hangout spots always end up becoming boring. people get too fucking comfortable about their hangout spots and don't want to explore and be imaginative about it.
I mean, I think that was one of the nice things about living together is we could kind of do whatever needed to be done, right?
Yeah, because we did play video games. We did go out and drink. We did flirt with girls. I mean, like, we did everything. We tried to flirt with girls, sorry.
Yeah, we flirted with a lot of girls, right? Yeah, we were fucking dripping in it, bro.
We even tried to play basketball. And sometimes we went out into town, you know? Some of the fucking best moments were when we went to H Mart or something.
The buffet.
And there were things so that good. You guys didn't like to do that I would just not do with you. Like, no matter how much diversity you guys gave me, the only thing I regret in Gatcher is I wish I had one token rich friend. I'm not gonna lie. It might sound a little mean when I say that, but I do.
No, I get it, because it's like someone who can like afford to do, like, for instance, I can't afford to go to one of those rooms where you break a bunch of shit to like lose out on stress.
Yeah.
So if we wanted to do that, you would have to pay for me. And then it's like got weird, and it can have weird energy.
Or that one time where I brought donut and donut to fucking Dave and Buster's, and then donut ended up fucking crying. I don't know what triggered what the fuck just happened. He started feeling he was like the loneliest boy. He would never find a girlfriend. I had to cry in the car. So I still have this Dave and Buster's fucking card that has a fuck ton of money in it that I still haven't used. So I wasn't just butthurt about the card. I was butthurt because I could not understand how the fuck Dave and Buster's, a basic grown-up Chuck E. Cheese with a bunch of fucking kids. It might be grown-up Chuck E. Cheese, but the fucking kids are dominating that place. What the fuck did you see that triggered you into thinking you were going to be lonely for the rest of your goddamn fucking life? Plus, this is like one of the dumbest things to be anxious about. Like, if you were anxious about dropping out of school or something, that's like more immediate. You were in fucking sophomore year worried you were gonna be a virgin forever.
I mean, but I get that. You're drunk, because you guys are drunk, right?
No! I should clarify. It's not like I wanted to go to more expensive things. It's that when people have to count their money, they're very picky about what they want to do. So if I was like, hey, I want to go to play, I had to find someone who really fucking loves plays. For me, I don't have to think like that. My privilege allows me not to need to think like that. I can just go to anything that I'm semi-interested to do. Other people have to go to things when they're super fucking, otherwise they don't want
to
do
it. Oh, it's so hard being so rich. No one goes to a play with me.
I'm not complaining about, like, a real hard life.
No, well, you know what? Maybe I should just go buy. Maybe I should start playing online games.
I'll buy 10 video games for you.
Well, you'd have to buy 20 because we each need a copy.
Which is, like, actually not even that much money compared to whatever I fucking spend.
When you go out and drink, like, $100 whiskeys.
Like, literally buying 10 indie games for the both of us is less than fucking spending on 2 expensive whiskeys.
Dude, that's so wild. Do you remember how cheap our lives were when we lived together? I mean, like, you want to know what we needed for a good time? 2 $7 packs of cigarettes, 2 like $15 handles of whiskey, and that was it. And then we were just good. Like, that was like how we would spend a weekend. I mean, every once in a while, not every once in a while, because you would get drunk enough to where you'd be like, I'm gonna buy 500 wings.
Yeah, I would
and
do that.
Then there'd be a little more money, but like, that didn't always happen. Sometimes we just got wasted and, like, you know, lived this debauched lifestyle. I can't imagine ever spending more than, like, the most expensive whiskey I ever bought was I'll buy Maker's Mark, or I did when I drank every once in a while. I'd buy some Maker's Mark, which is a little pricey.
You're the only friend of mine who drinks Maker's Mark like, hey, this is a treat. So for the longest of times, I actually thought Maker's Mark was like a big fucking treat. Everyone was shit
it
on
it is
me.
For certain communities in the world. It is for my class echelon,
which is really funny that you taught me how to be not from my class. People thought I was
a
poser.
I'm teaching
dude.
You the way.
I love vets.
I love veterans. I love veterans.
DSA. Jesus. DSA.
DSA. DSA. The Divisive States of America.
I am going to try because I don't really speak Wolof. So I won't be able to pronounce the name of this movie properly, but I think it's called Camp de Tiaru. Tiaru. It's spelled T-H-I-A-R-O-Y-E. Senegalese movie directed by Ousmane Sembène, the godfather of fucking African cinema. I apologize for bringing a normie film. And
yeah, this is a Nori film. This is mad Nori. Walter just started laughing because he saw my face. My face is just like, oh my god, well, a Nori movie. Meanwhile,
he's the godfather of African cinema, man. It is a little Nori.
In Walter's patrician circles, it's Nori.
The other director is Thierno Fatiso. This film also was controversial because it was banned in France for like fucking full time.
Fuck the French.
DSA.
Yeah.
This movie is about the Thierry massacre.
Oh,
where
boy.
Basically, a bunch of Senegalese soldiers came back helping the French fight, probably in World War II. They were waiting to get their salary, or I don't know how the military works, so I can't say exactly what they're trying to get back, but some type of cash. To get that cash, though, it isn't there yet, so they kind of wait at these camps that are heavily guarded. When it's time to give money back to these soldiers, they decide to give like only 50% of the money. So the soldiers protest, and instead of paying them their fair due shares, the French pull in with tanks and shoot them all down. French have reported about 35 soldiers killed. Some survivors have said there's about 300.
300 people massacred?
Yes. Pretty dark shit, honestly, but what can you say? And this is kind of the norm, right? It did make me think a little bit less bad about Tiananmen, where all the white people say there are 3,000 people who died while the government's like, only 120. So I guess every fucking shitty government does
it. Are you kidding me? Like, every fucking government is like, yeah, no, we didn't kill that many people. And meanwhile, it's like the black box in Calcutta where like the British were like fucking just pouring bodies into a giant cube underground.
So sometimes I'm a little jealous. Maybe it's not correct to say jealous, but I do think that I don't get to that point where you like ramble about films with like the same type of passion and like empathy.
Are you talking about when I'm like yelling about like Gummo, for example?
Yeah, exactly. It's funny because when I watched this movie, I was looking at some of the reviews and a lot of people were like, God damn, I'm so angry at the French. I'm so angry at the French. And while I thought the movie was really good, I couldn't find that type of anger within myself. So I like did some thinking about some of the movies that have made me angry or like made me feel like some strong emotion. A lot of them are like individual ones. So like sometimes I watch a movie about Asian diaspora of one person going to one place, and that can make me feel really like emotional or powerful. But it's very rare for me to watch a social movement movie for me to feel like really big. And I wonder if it's like because I'm getting numb or like my empathy sucks.
I actually think you're ignoring the fact that there are a lot of movies that give you a lot of emotions. I think you're just not very good at anger, because you have lots of movies that make you sad or make you wistful or make you lonely. You just struggle with anger. And this is not, I mean, this was true of us living together. You were never good at being angry. The only times I've seen you get angry is when you're super drunk. You don't get passionate and angry the way I do. I actually think you have a lot of empathy. It just tends to manifest outside of anger, right? Think of like to all the boys I love. You know, that gives you so many emotions.
There's definitely no anger in that one.
I know.
Except maybe I'm a little angry that the second movie kind of sucked, but that's all right.
You know, the lady who wrote To All the Boys I Love is like re-releasing a book that they're making into a Hulu series.
To All the Boys I Love 3?
No, it's called The Summer I Turned Pretty. I don't know. I read the last, I've been doing this thing with these like romance novels that like people love that are not really my taste. I've been reading the last chapter just because I'm curious. It always makes me annoyed. And, like, I'm always like, this is so dumb. Especially Nicholas Sparks. I've been thinking about seeing if I can rewrite a Nicholas Sparks novel to be a horror novel, because the last chapters always read like serial killer obsession stuff if you just changed a few words here and there.
It's actually really funny that you feel like I don't get angry, because I remember being really young and being told always to stop getting angry. So I was like a tantrum kid that I would like not get a toy and fucking go fucking ham on the ground, cry on the ground and go, ah, give me my toy. I was told it was so bad. If my parents wanted to go out, no one wanted to, because anything would set me off for me to like fucking just sit on the floor and not move or something stupid like that, because my tantrums were so bad. But I still throw tantrums. They just come out as very passive aggressive.
I think that's what it is, right? Is these tantrums stopped being effective as an adult, so you switch to passive aggressive tantrums.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny, right? Because I do recognize I still throw tantrums, but I guess the tantrums don't look like anger anymore.
Do you think that says something about, like, so for instance, I'm the total opposite. I threw one temper tantrum and my mom just ignored me and I never did it again. And now I don't lose my temper on people all that often, but like if there's like something I'm pissed about, like especially if it's something like social or emotional, I can get heated about it very quickly. I don't know if there's something there, but it's just like I'm the opposite. I like never threw temper tantrums as a child. I was very anxious and quiet, and now I'm like fucking getting pissed. I'm getting heated and yelling about homeless people. Would you call punching the ceiling tiles out of the ceiling a temper tantrum?
Yeah, but no matter how much you push that moment, I wouldn't have come out ranting and being like, I'm super mad, blah, 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 blah. In fact, the moment I started talking, I feel like I would have been like very easily swayed away from anger, because I would have been like, I'm being embarrassing. I don't have a lot of times where I feel like my anger is justified enough that I can feel like I'm staying mad, even in a movie like this. So even if I got angry because not enough people cared about Camp Teori, if someone was like, let me hear you rant, I would get really self-conscious about why I would be angry about that, and it would just collapse.
Some of it's because it's the past, and some of it's also because you don't interact with that. Like, so for me, the things I get angry about are things I have to deal with every day, and so they make me angry because I'm constantly dealing with it.
But I do want to say that I do think there is a numbness, because when I read reviews about like, oh my god, I'm so mad at the French for this film, it makes me like remember how much fucking people today actually feel like this modern age is worse than before. There was a time before that things were good, and all this like discourse and COVID and fucking like cops, I don't understand why it feels that more and more people are like, today it's bad. And watching movies like this make me feel like if you want to fix today, you have to recognize that the entire human history has just been as bad.
Wait, especially when like old people come into my store and they're like, man, things were so much better back in the day. You know, even when they're like people who tend to agree with my politics, right? People who are like, oh man, you know, all these cops are killing people, you know? And
look,
like,
even young people do it.
Well, exactly. Like people who think like back in the day was like less brutal. But you had Jim Crow era South, right? Like that was like less brutal than what's happening now. Or you go back before then and you have like fucking serfs, you know, like working under a brutal king, you know, or like you go back even farther than that, you know, and you have like fucking brutal starvation because of crop failure, right? Like things have always been bad.
I understand what you mean, and I know you're like coming from a good place, but I think the way you sound right now sounds just a little bit like a Republican dad telling fucking kids to stop protesting. So to clarify, what I'm really kind of saying is like we should Hegelian this shit, right? Like I feel like people just don't recognize how many problems today have such a long line of history. And that history is usually less visible unless you really try to look for it. I think people need to understand that if you want to fix today, you at least have to recognize what happens in the past. So as I mentioned, I was looking at films where may have actually helped me feel a little more powerful, or like made me feel a little more anger.
Put some chutzpah, put some fire in your belly.
The first fucking film that came in my mind was this movie I watched at a film festival near Baltimore called The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. It was the first experience I ever really had consuming Black Panther narrative. And I don't know, I came out that feeling so fucking powerful. It was so fucking cool and radical. And also I was like, my fucking God, I hate Edgar Hoover. He's so trash and terrible. He's my least favorite person.
It is literally hard not to hear about the Black Panthers and not getting pissed, because it like it seemed real dope, and then it's similar to Black Wall Street, right? Just like people coming through, yeah, and just like totally decimating shit.
The NRA actually immediately was not in support of open arms because of the Black Panther movement, and look at where they are today.
No, I mean that's anyone who wants to talk about taking umbrage with the Black Panthers, like either you just like heard the word Black Panther and got scared because you know it was black people with guns, which is ooh so scary, or you're just a fucking racist. There are groups of communities that get a bad name because of like the goddamn like dominant zeitgeist, but like, you know who did nothing wrong? The Black Panthers. You know who did nothing wrong? The Weather Underground.
And a lot of civil rights shit, it's like clever in like, I understand there's a gap in these legislations that I can seat myself into to make a very weird point of hypocrisy. Martin Luther King Jr. did this all the fucking time, where he definitely made protests in relationship whenever America would call out USSR for the lack of freedom. USA would like be like, USSR, no freedom in speech, or something like that. And Martin Luther King Jr. would stage a protest on the lack of free speech in the South. The Greyhound, the irony of having a Greyhound bus where you can have black people on the bus and then move into the South where suddenly you can't. Directly attacking gaps in the American institution show that there's things that just don't make sense, right? And obvious, because racism does not really make sense if you want to do it in a practical way.
If you want to be practically racist, if you want to use pragmatism and practicality to be racist, it doesn't make sense.
The Black Panthers, though, they realized that, I mean, they decided to bear arms, right? Right in front of the fucking police stations. And that was like a gap they were exploiting because people freaked the fuck out. But at the same time, it was their right. What I mean clever is like that type of like exploitation of gaps in social rules to point out hypocrisy is really always really cool for me to read about. So yeah, maybe also like I really hated J. Edgar Hoover in this documentary, but while I hate the white people in this movie, these white people are a little, like, non-actors.
Can you give an example? When you watch Django Unchained, which is a movie about race, one of the main villains is Leonardo DiCaprio. He is despicable from the get-go. There is no element of him that's, like, not a comic book villain than a human being, versus your movie where these people are just people who have very bad caustic viewpoints.
They're definitely not humanized, though, by the way. They're definitely not humanized.
Oh, interesting.
They're almost non-characters.
Oh, interesting, interesting. So they're more like machines almost? Or a plot device? Could you call them a plot device?
They're almost like plot devices. They're probably even easierly better thought of as like lampposts.
Okay.
Like a lamppost with a sign says, I said racist shit.
So do you mean a signpost or do you mean a literal lamppost?
Okay, maybe a signpost is a better example than a lamppost.
But so the Senegalese characters, on the other hand, are like, they're like fully realized, right? They're like three-dimensional characters.
In my opinion, I think the Senegalese characters are way more realized, yes. One of the main ones, he's your sort of more Western Senegalese character. So he listens to classical music. He reads freaking, I don't know, fuck, I don't know what he reads. He wears sunglasses. He has a French wife. And then he gets into like a spiel with this American, African-American. And the African-American comes back and apologizes to him. And then he puts on Marcus Garvey and shows him that he doesn't only listen to white things. So there's like that going on. He's also the only one who speaks his French and English. All the French people can't even speak English. The white French people, that was really fucking funny because every single time they needed a translator for the Americans, they always had to ask him despite how racist they were. You know, actually, maybe I do want to talk a little bit about how these white people represent different types of racism. So I guess there's like three signposts we could talk about, and they're all Frenchies. There's like a nice guy, a jealous guy, and then a person who hides. The person who hides is that dude who's the head of the camp, and he uses other Senegalese soldiers to control the camp so he doesn't have to confront anyone who is black, basically. An example of this is like there's this scene where the food is really bad. So the soldiers, they want to protest. They're like, what the fuck? We're not prisoners. We deserve to eat good food. And they complain to the Senegalese cooks. And this commander is just hiding. Basically, he has power, but he doesn't have any responsibility. And that's like how his racism works. He is creating these conditions for these people, but he doesn't need to answer for any of the conditions when they're bad. This commander responds to another sort of leader, and that guy's racism comes out the most, and it's because he's like really insecure about how much he's dumber than the main character who I mentioned before. So that scene that I was talking about where they need the main character to translate for them, this guy is the one involved. So he's like super jealous and also always annoyed when he's like outsmarted. So his racism comes mostly from his jealousy. And because he's taught that him as a white person has to be smarter or more intellectual than black people. Kind of like men who get insecure when a woman presents herself with more physical strength. The third guy, the nice guy, which we all know about, and he's sort of saying goodbye to these soldiers and hoping they have a good life, basically, because they're kind of his friends. When the soldiers are protesting to get back their fair money, he's like standing up for them, saying they should get back their fair money. This is justice. And he always tells the white commanders to, like, stop being so fucking racist. Except he never really uses those words. He's just telling them to stop being what they're doing. But of course, the good guy is always perpetuating the system in his own way. The best example of this is when the character who reads a lot of books, he's really good friends with this commander. He realizes his village was completely massacred, so he lost his family, his parents, everyone was killed. He's like telling this French commander about this, and he's like sharing his feelings like, man, this is so fucking crazy. I don't even feel like the Nazis did shitty stuff like this to me. And the white commander is like, immediately, right? Don't say France is as bad as the Nazis. And then he like also follows up by saying something like, the massacre in his village is like 10 years ago and things have changed a lot. Which is super ironic because this film ends in a massacre. And also ironic because things still have not changed in a lot of places when it comes to race. Yeah, so I guess they're not just signposts, but you can see these white people, their hatred towards black people is not portrayed as pure hatred. I'm a villain and I'm racist. The way their racism is presented is very based on structural racism, and they're very passive in the way they reinforce racism.
So then it is kind of similar. It is kind of similar to Django Unchained, only at the opposite end of the spectrum. If you're talking about a spectrum of humanity, like there is a person, I am a person, versus a force that's like meant to convey ideas in a narrative context. On one end, you have the antagonist in Django Unchained, who is nothing but an engine of violence and hate. The French in your movie are cold and unemotional and are just a representation of like the brutality that systematic violence is. But they're both talking, they're both representing systematic violence as mechanized.
Yeah, I can see that. But honestly, like a better example is just, we just talked about the Black Panther documentary, and J. Edgar Hoover, he is despicable. I hate these white people. They don't feel like the villains that this film was able to paint J. Edgar Hoover like.
I mean, this is a real person. J. Edgar Hoover is a real ass dude. And these people in the movie weren't necessarily, they didn't have like Jacques Aruno who like committed the massacre, and you can like go on Wikipedia and be like, oh, Jacques Aruno, he gunned down some Senegalese people because he's a fucking monster. And then you go to the movie and you're like, there he is, he's a real person, right?
Versus like Hitler, who we all can name and get really mad at if we wanted to, though I think getting mad at him is a little overrated. Is that too controversial?
No, it's
okay.
Good,
it's a little overrated because I think everyone has decided Hitler is the pure evil, so everyone can hate on him without feeling bad.
Oh no, yeah, that's totally true. Well, I mean, like this idea that like you want to make Hitler the big bad guy, meanwhile you have like fucking Andrew Jackson. Now, look, Hitler was a bad dude. I have relatives who died in the Holocaust. It's bad. Hitler was a bad man, but there were plenty of people even within the Nazi hierarchy who were bad people, right? You can go all the way to hang out with Mr. Pol Pot in Cambodia. Fucking terrible ass dude. Joseph MacArthur, American dude who totally fucking fucked over a lot of people with his commie witch trap. I mean, like, there are, like, so
really
many
think that's
fucked
my
up people.
Point. I'm more saying that, like, I get annoyed by people who use stories from Hitler and the people you're talking about to almost sometimes justify their actions or the actions of people around them. Like, people don't try to check themselves or, like, don't think they're evil because the Hitlers of the world exist. It's weird, like, people use Hitler's evil as a coping mechanism or something. At the same time, Hitler is a incredibly bad person. So I'm not saying he isn't. I'm just, I think the joy of everyone being like, oh my God, there's one evil and no one else is as evil as him, is a fucked up understanding of the world.
Yeah, it's more bad. It's like more reducing the world to like, I mean, I don't know. This is my hot take. I don't trust any leader. Like, maybe that's not a hot take. That's a pretty easy take.
But I lead you.
You do not. I'm the leader of this podcast.
Okay, you might be the leader of this podcast, but I'm the leader in bed.
In bed? In bed when you...
Bark for me, dog.
When you fuck me, when you fuck
bark
my
for
asshole.
Me.
So I watched watched The Hills Have Eyes. Okay, so I think this movie is about class warfare, but it's also about sort of like a Hobbesian understanding of the state of nature that I think's really interesting. And I think is a little nail on the head and maybe not 100% successful, especially when the class warfare stuff is concerned. It's rare that you see a horror movie that is like so gratuitous and so skewed and uneven and also has a political and social message, right? When you think of like political horror films, in my mind, they tend to be like really nuanced, kind of like more subtle, like ramp up attention very slowly. This movie is like paced like like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but also like has a message. It's like jamming into your chest, which I think is wild. But so the basic premise is there's these shitty rich people who are driving through town, this like dead ass fucking town.
I didn't think they were rich.
They are rich.
But the dad is a cop.
Yeah, but he's like a retired cop.
They were also driving trailers that I see in like white trash neighborhoods.
Okay, you're losing the plot. Okay, so first of all, this is an important distinction. The difference in class echelons of trailers is important. If your trailer is static and doesn't move because it's your home, there's a good chance you don't have a lot of cash. If you have a home and also a trailer so you can travel, you're probably rich. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. I will say then I must have misunderstood the movie entirely because I thought these poor people were fighting poor people.
No.
Also, those dogs are not rich dogs. Don't a lot of white trash people have those dogs?
I mean, if we want to talk about like class representation, when people think of like the dogs people have, it tends to be pit bulls, right? Pit bulls or hound dogs.
Okay, the other reason why I didn't think they were rich is because they were going to L.A. to the dreams and the fucking thing. I thought they were, like, running away to L.A. because they were, like, tired and fucking of their shitty lives.
Okay, let me just, like, put this in perspective. So there's this family, a mom, a dad, their sons and daughters, and one of the daughter's husband. They're driving to L.A. and they're taking a stop in this fucking desert because their grandparents have bought the couple a silver mine for their 25th anniversary, which is the silver anniversary.
Wait, they bought it?
Yes.
I thought they inherited it.
No, they bought it. They literally bought it.
Okay, that changes a lot. All right. No wonder they're rich now.
They are rich, and they're not just rich. They're actively taking something from a community. They're gentrifying the space, basically, by taking this thing that's not quite theirs via money. The other thing is, they suck. I was watching this movie, and I knew there was going to be some brutal shit that was going to happen, and I was like, man, I'm not sure these people deserve it. Within 5 minutes, the cop dad is talking about black people and hillbillies and uses the N-word and refers to them using arrows as if like they're like savages, right? This dude sucks. And I'm like, okay, but what if his family doesn't suck? And then when their car breaks down in the middle of the desert, which of course is right before the horror shenanigans start happening, the mother and the daughters are all sitting together and I'm like, man, these people don't seem so bad. They're just like women who just are married to shitty people. And then one of their German shepherds starts barking and the other one is being silent, and the mom of the family is like, you know, Beast, that's the quieter dog, the Beast never barks. And the daughter goes, oh yeah, well, you know, he only barks when he's going in for the kill. And then the mother laughs and goes, yeah, remember when Beast killed that lady's poodle? And they just laugh about how their dog brutally murders someone else's dog, which is not unnecessarily the same level of like being bigoted, but it shows a lack of empathy that is disturbing. I know people whose dogs have been killed by other people's dogs, and they are all, everyone's upset in this situation. No one's like, my dog is better than your dog. Everyone's upset. It always sucks. So from the get-go, these rich people suck. On the other end of the spectrum, you have the people who are living in the mountains. It's this one family led by Jupiter. It's Jupiter, his son Mercury, his son Pluto, his son, and there's one more, I can't remember. And then his wife and their daughter. And as it turns out, there's this gas station attendant who his wife gave birth to this kid who was like super fucked up, like from the beginning was like a bad dude, ends up killing the guy's mom or the guy's wife, the bad guy's own mother. And so the guy who's given birth to this kid hits him over the face with a pipe and leaves him off in the desert to die because he can't like kill his own son. And then of course this kid who's left in the desert becomes Jupiter and has his own family of like fucking mountain people, cannibal savages. And they suck. They eat people. They're like totally uncool because they catch people and they consume them. These people suck and they're stuck in the middle of the desert. And for me, a good portion of the fight between the mountain people, Jupiter's clan, versus the people who are traveling through, it feels less like a fight versus good and evil and more like a natural fight, more like a state of nature, right? The idea that, like, without a society, without an arbiter for whom creates the rules, which is from Thomas Hobbes, there's only animalistic violence, right? There's no arbiter to say what is allowed to be done and to punish those who go against what is allowed to be done. There's no one to punish those who break laws, and there are no laws. And so the fight does not feel like a battle between good and evil like in traditional horror movies, and feels more two groups of people fighting for survival. And there's like some other stuff that I think informs this. The dog, one of the dogs nearly kills, or does kill, really, but he comes back in the sequel. Michael Berryman's character, who I'm pretty sure was Pluto, this dog kills this human, right? I mean, that's what's more state of nature than a human being killed by a dog, right? In society, like, when dogs kill people, it's like a whole thing. There are laws. It's like a tragedy, right? There's stuff put in the way, you know. So, for instance, there's a kid I know who got attacked by a pit bull. The cops actually came and shot the dog before the kid could get killed by the dog. You know, there's like protectors and arbiters to make sure the state of nature thing doesn't happen. In the wild, if you're out in the middle of nowhere and a dog gets you by the ankle and tears out your ankle, and then you're like on the ground crawling, and then the dog circles back and rips your throat out. That happens because that's just the natural world, right? It's not even like the bad guys, the Jupiter's clan, are these predators. They're just humans who are subjected to the state of nature, just like their victims, this shitty rich family.
When the dog ripped out his ankle and he was playing with his bone, that was fun.
Oh yeah, it's fucking great.
Actually, now that you put it this way, I am a little curious. Them wanting to buy the mine is 100% the rich people being like aggressors onto that land. But because so many of those characters didn't really want to, it was kind of only the dad who wanted to do that, right? It does feel like the Jupiter family clan are just coming down and wrecking the house, but they're stealing stuff.
They're wrecking the house because that's how they survive. They exist within the state of nature. And I think there are some events that happen in this movie that break that through line a little bit and make it a little unsuccessful in trying to present this idea. But I think that a good portion of the way these people exist presents this idea of like, no, this is just what it would be like if we didn't have society. A Hobbesian nightmare that is no arbiter to make rules, only survival. I think the villains are bad people, but I don't think they are monsters in the same way Leatherface is from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But I also don't think that the shitty family driving through the desert are victims in the same way that the victims of Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre are victims. I will also say, so Wes Craven does say the film expresses rage against American culture and the bourgeoisie, which I get as someone who, like, I don't know, my own town is getting pretty rapidly gentrified. Prices are going up everywhere. You have these, like, people being shitty to the people who are there first, right? Like, I get wanting to make a movie like this. Like, I understand being angry and needing to lash out in this way. Because what happens is, as the shitty family gets more and more embattered and attacked by Jupiter's clan, the more violent they become. So by the end, the sort of hero who's the one of the daughter's husband, who's like baby daughter, whose child is kidnapped by the Jupiter clan in order to consume, because they're very excited to eat this baby. He's like knocked this guy over, one of the Jupiter's clan, and is just stabbing him over and over and over again like a wild beast. And it's not like, oh man, a justice. Like the way it's shot with his face, like screaming, and it being the last thing you see is just this guy stabbing this other guy over and over again. It is like nail on the head. So obvious. Wes Craven is like, look, see, we are all the same. We're all monsters. We're all cannibals on the inside. It's just what we have access to that keeps us from doing this. And I think you can also see that when the other sister and brother finally kill Jupiter, the big bad guy, and they're like cheering and screaming. When normally in these slasher movies, when you like kill the bad guy, they're like, oh my god, it's finally over, and then the heroine will like slump down on the ground and like cry. But instead, you have these like titular characters like screaming with joy that they've won, that they've committed an act of violence against someone else. Like, what, there's no doubt in my mind that Wes Craven is like, look, pushing at sort of the violent nature of humanity and how outside of our like fetters and trappings, we're just beasts.
On the other side, though, is that this movie is very different with the reactions towards deaths too. Because usually when someone dies in a slasher movie, the kids just sit around and, oh my god, this person's actually dead. This is no joke. But wasn't there a little more, like, real sadness?
There's real sadness, but there's also a willingness to use and, like, commodify really quickly, right? The brother and sister are very upset when their mother finally succumbs to her wounds from an attack from the Jupiter clan. But they also literally tie her dead body to a chair to trick Jupiter into going towards the body so that they can trap him. They are more active there than a traditional slasher victim, like in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where the people are kind of just like trying to run away. They're like actively fighting, but it's because they are within this state of nature. They are not the prey They are just in war, basically. They are in battle with others in the state of nature, where it's like family against family, clan against clan, tribe against tribe. Or at least that's the argument. I don't know how true that is in real... I mean, like, I think it's a little bit of a dick thing to say that, like, without society, we'll all be beasts, because there's, like, human empathy. And you do see that. One of the cannibal girls... her name is Ruby, like, really wants to leave the cannibal clan and actually steals the baby and gives it back to the dad to make sure that they, like, don't eat the baby. You could use that as an example of, like, see, Hobbesian nature isn't totally true. There are those who are capable of empathy. It actually makes her a victim because without her, she needs to be saved. Actually, that's not true. She's pretty badass. She does grab a rattlesnake and shoves it into one of the cannibals' necks. And has him, like, get bitten to death by a rattlesnake.
She was crying when the guy went ham and crazy at the end that you said was,
no, that's like... true. I totally forgot about that. It's so fantastic because she still cares about this man. She killed him because she doesn't want to see them eat a baby and she wants to leave this situation. But she still has a connection to this person. It's so great. Again, it shows that they're not just the monsters. They're people just like the shitty family. It's why some people call this an anti-Western and not a horror film. Like, I could see Cormac McCarthy writing something like this. And I think some of his work actually does sort of not get close to the camp and the cannibal stuff, but get closer to some of the ideas and opinions. Especially Blood Meridian is like a neo-Western that sort of does the old school Western thing of like, look at these masculine men. But instead of that being a successful thing, it shows how violent it is and how it eventually, this like sort of masculine identity, eventually burns itself out and destroys itself. Cormac McCarthy's not championing a sense of bravado. He's like, no, this is a problem. And Wes Craven does the same thing when at the end, the guy's committing violence against the guy who was going to eat his child. He's not a hero. He's just one man killing another man. The similarities is that it is a critique of traditional archetypes. Cormac McCarthy is critiquing the traditional Western hero archetype. Wes Craven is critiquing the traditional horror movie hero, horror movie villain archetype by making them both humans instead of monsters. Same thing with Cormac McCarthy. His Western heroes are not larger than life gunslingers. They're just people with flaws who inevitably can't survive.
I think it's a little less making them human and monsters. It's making the good guys villains.
I mean, do you think the need to survive is a villainous action?
I think both of them look like villains in the story.
See, I would argue that using a Hobbesian lens, they're saying, no, this is just how you survive. Because it's not like the cannibal family only eats people. They eat everything. They're just trying to survive out in the middle of a desert.
If Wes Craven was just trying to critique American culture, why do you think he needed dogs in him?
I think it's also a state of nature thing, and nothing illustrates the state of nature more than an animal killing a human. You know, because it's not a monster dog, it is just a dog, right? Like, that's just the nature. That's just natural world.
So why not a cat?
Because a cat, it's hard for a cat to kill a person.
Don't you think there's a little bias against cats?
I'm gonna find every cat in the world, and I'm gonna stuff each one up your asshole.
I forgot! You don't think cats are scary like I do, so.
No! Cats are not scary! I could literally punch out any cat. I love cats. I'm a cat person. I would never hit a cat. But, like, I'm not afraid of them. Dude, Terry is not gonna be on this episode, but Terry Trailer Manteris recently did see a trailer called Beast about Idris Elba in the middle of the jungle fighting like a super evil lion that he is very excited about.
That actually sounds so fun.
No, but so this is just like my relationship with like why I'm not afraid of cats. My aunt is afraid of cats, or she was. She's more comfortable with them now, but she was for a long time very afraid of cats. And we all went to my cousin's new house to like celebrate, and the cat got out, and it was like a mean cat. And was like hissing at my poor aunt, and I was a little bit drunk, and so I just picked up the cat and it just started like swirling around my arm, like biting me and scratching me. And I just ran to my cousin's bedroom and just like threw it onto the bed as if it was a football. And the cat was fine because I didn't throw it too hard. But like, what am I going to be afraid? Cat? I mean, it just scratched me. I had a bunch of scratches on my arm, but like, what? It's like a raspberry bush. Are you afraid of a raspberry bush? Because it can give you scratches?
I mean, I am scared of plants sometimes, especially when I'm in the jungle.
When have you been in the jungle?
Okay, not the jungle. Like, if I'm hiking in Hong Kong and there's a bunch of trees and I have to, like, sway them away so I don't get scratches, I'm in a state of fear, I think. At least I would call that fear.
You're afraid in the state of nature.
Yeah, I would be afraid in the state of nature. I don't think I would do very well.
No, I don't think I mean, I think I would do fine as long as I had my glasses.
So you can start fires?
No, I need to see with my glasses.
If you're in the state of nature and everything's on the equal plane, do you really need to see anymore?
Yes, you. Of course you need to see. If you can't see, you're not going to make it through. That's the whole thing about eyes. You need okay. them.
Well, that doesn't seem like nature's very fucking fair then.
No, the point of state or nature is that it is unfair. That is the whole point. That without an arbiter, life is unfair.
I thought the point was that like now it's fair because both of them can use violence.
No, that's not my point at all. My point is that in the state of nature, people are reduced to extreme violence because that is the only way to survive.
I think that's why the sexual assault is in that film.
That's my biggest critique of this film, is that there's a sexual assault scene that I think muddies the water a little bit. Or muddies the water a lot, because that's not about survival. That's about, like, just being
So why bad, are you right? scared of letting both sides just be villains?
Because I personally don't think that's what the film is presenting. I think that is just like leftover 70s stuff, schlock horror elements. Like, it's a horror movie in the 70s about evil people. Of course we're going to put a rapist scene in it.
Yeah, but the man said the N-word, dude. Isn't both sides kind of the villains?
See, and that, again.
No?
I don't know, man. I think,
of course I wouldn't know 100%, but do you actually want to like go back into every single horror movie and go to all the villains in them and be like, okay, actually they're all humans and there's nothing wrong with them? See, that's why I would see it more as everyone's a villain then.
I'm saying my read of The Hills and Eyes is saying that the villains are just humans too, with the exception of this assault scene, which I feel muddies the water.
Okay, what if it was trying to present both sides as villains? Would it be 100% successful? Because I would find that very successful then.
Yes, that's true. But then if they're both villains, one is worse, right? Maybe?
I mean, which one do you think is worse? Because I think it's the rich family right now.
Really? I don't know.
I mean, they're the ones coming over and stealing your diamonds. That's like fucked up, dude.
See, no, I think this has to do more with immorality, right? I think this movie is a void of morals, right? I don't think one is bad and one is good. I think it's closer to a state of nature thing. And that it's harder to illustrate that point with the sexual assault scene, because you can't make sexual violence not be villainous. It is always villainous.
If you really think sexual assault belongs in a state of nature, it shows how fucking sexist you are as a person. You think rape is a natural progression of life, not a violence of social understandings of gender.
And I think we can get back to we were talking about brutal actions as far as horror movie stuff goes, and like whether or not they're super successful. I'm of the opinion putting sexual assault in horror movies is like usually a bad idea. I know there are some people who like do it well, I guess, but I don't think I've found one that felt palatable, that doesn't gatekeep an audience, right? You could probably say the same thing about cannibalism.
No, I think this movie has a better example, and we had a little bit of a discussion before we started this. I think it's motherfucking the dad using the N-word in the first 5 minutes of the movie. Why? Like, it allows me to be like, okay, you want me to know he's a racist. But as you said, the discussion between the daughter and the mother shows they're bad people in a much more subtler and interesting way. Why do you need your character to use the N-word to push that
point?
I
will say that his character archetype is cop. In horror movies, there's a good chance for the cops to be the good guys. Him saying the N-word in the context of being a police officer solidifies that not only was he a cop and a racist, but he was a bad racist cop.
That is fair. The other thing that pushes me to be like, I don't think it's necessary, is because he uses it once. So if you only needed to use it once to prove one point, I feel like you could have done it in a way that it didn't have to end up him using it, right? Even if you just had to have like one of the fucking people, like, I don't know, one of the sons there who didn't get along with him very well, like bump heads with him and was like, oh, God damn it, I'm a little annoyed. I'm an edgy son. He sometimes uses the N-word on black people because as a cop. You could have done that and just avoided him saying it.
I will say that one of the things I've seen, especially in horror fiction from this period, is that often white authors will like code their people who are going to be victims or who are bad people, like people who deserve to get killed but are also still going to get killed by the monster, as bigots by a quick use of the N-word, right? It's like a very easy way to characterize. It's kind of a shortcut.
I know, and I think it's a little lazy.
No, it is. It is a total shortcut. I mean, like, look, here's the other thing. It's a fucking schlock horror movie where, like, people are cannibals, right? Like, there's no nuance and there's no subtlety in this movie.
But I think that's always been the irony. I'm sure there's like a bunch of fucking people annoyed at me right now. But like, why are you critiquing this? This is so fucking small. You only used it once. It's no fucking big deal. But for me, the fucking excuses people give are always like, well, it's not a big deal. If it's not a big deal, then it shouldn't be a fucking big deal if he's not the racist cop that uses the N-word. And it's like, okay, did that actually make a huge difference? Is it now because he's a racist? This whole fucking movie has changed. There's not even a single black person in this movie anyways. So literally, it would not have made a difference if he used it or not used it. I just don't understand why we go, oh, it's schlock, or oh, it's not a big deal, or something like that.
I'm not saying that it's not a big deal. I'm saying that there's not a lot of subtlety in this film, so it makes sense it would be there. I will say that I think you're right, that there are other ways to characterize without the use of that word, right? I think because Wes Craven says this is a movie about American culture and the bourgeoisie, when he put it in there, he was like, that's right, fuck you, you racists. To me, this feels like a lack of forethought. But I don't think it's like a flippant, like, oh, I'm just gonna make him racist. I think it is a key point that he is a bigot, that he is a racist. Because shitty people are shitty people, but there's a difference between someone who's like a shitty person and someone who's a racist.
Okay, if he didn't use the N-word, I would not have known he was a racist. Fair. But him being a racist or not a racist, what did that have anything to do with this movie in the first place?
I think it sediments them in a certain position. It characterizes them as a certain group of people. That was a purposeful choice to make them racist.
And my point is that your choice feels pointless.
Why do you think it's pointless?
Because in the end, it does nothing for the movie. And I think it's to say, okay, so why am I really trying to fight you on this point? It's because I think it has a lot to do with the sexual assault stuff.
The treatment of the sexual assault scene is flippant, and it feels like a plot device. You're saying similarly that the use of the N-word feels like a plot device.
Except I don't even know what it's devising to. He never uses his racism in this movie.
So what you're saying is it's just a quick way to make him an asshole, using actual trauma, right? In the same way that, like, the sexual assault is just a quick way to make the bad dudes bad in a way that uses someone's trauma. I don't know why I think it's important that he is a bigot and a racist.
It's like a shock value thing. You hear it and then you like think, oh, that's fuck, true. I can't forget
that's
it.
That's true. It is flippant. You're right. I think there would probably be a better way to get it done.
In the same way, like, if you want it, if you really think this movie needed the sexual assault scene, you could have done it better and you could have made a more nuanced approach to it, despite the fact that if you ask me how to do it, I wouldn't be able to give it to you.
I know how I would do it easy. How to present that level of violence without having sexual assault on screen. You just have one of the monster men bite the finger off one of the women. And you're like, yeah, see, in the state of nature, violence against women is like very easy to do.
I mean, in that case, he could have just kidnapped her with the baby and just brought them back to
the cannibal tent. The cannibal
tent.
Yeah,
the cannibal tent.
Yeah.
Because in the end, the only reason why the girl had to stay behind was that she could have some weird incestual love with her brother. That was like the only fucking point.
No, it's not incestual love. It's a fucking reflection of the clan's togetherness, right? They become their own warfare clan.
I don't know. I think that sister and that brother had some weird tension throughout the whole film.
That's because you're a pervert. Actually, no, there is one scene
going,
where...
Oh my god, weirdo! Stop touching me, weirdo! Oh my god!
That's just bad writing. That's just like weird brother-sister shit.
I couldn't even tell if they were brothers and sisters until they started dying. I was
they
like...
They were both blonde. How could you not tell from the get-go?
They look like they were dating for like
half the
movie.
You're just a pervert. That's what it is. You're just constantly trying to masturbate to incestual scenes in movies.
Incest is literally my least fucking favorite porn. It's so fucking boring. I don't care about incest. But yeah, I don't really have an issue with having racist characters. I just don't really want to see white people saying the N-word just to fucking prove a point. If you want your white actors to use the N-word, I kind of hope that there's actually some real work that goes in it. Just going, I want him to look racist, is not real work. Also, I don't want to blame this film, right? Because it is the consistency that I have an issue with. In the end, like, it's not like, oh, this person said the N-word. What the fuck? It's so bad. Ugh. It's more, I'm just like tired of like having to sit through a movie and the first 5 minutes someone says the N-word.
No, it's such an easy way to code a character. It's such an easy way to code a character. You're like, this guy sucks. How do I make him suck? Oh, I make him say the N-word. Super easy. It is total laziness, and it's laziness that's using something that's like uncool. I didn't have a whole lot of Twitter interaction, except for one thing that I love, which is that if you go on the Fake Film Fans Twitter, does anyone have any Naruto waifus or husbandos they need to talk about? What about Twilight waifus and husbandos? And something called Nin Online Ninja MMORPG liked the tweet, which... is awesome. So apparently Nin Online likes us. So
Nin Online?
Nin, N-I-N Online, Ninja MMORPG.
So why do you like that username? Just because you love ninjas?
No, I think it's weird that an online game that neither of us know nothing about liked our tweet.
Do you know it's an online game?
Yes, Nin? It's like, it's not just like someone who likes Ninja MMORPGs, dude. It's like a fucking, it's like an actual company for what looks like a kind of shitty browser game.
Should we promote a little bit and try to play it and then talk about it next time?
Do I have to buy it? Because if I have to buy it, I don't want to.
The fucking art looks a little like Naruto. And the slogan is, well, what will be your ninja way? Begin your ninja life today.
I'm downloading it right now. I'm downloading it.
All right. If this game is sick, let us all play it together and we can meet back up and talk about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everyone, download this game. Go to Nin Online, spelled N-I-N. And then the word online.org, and you can just download this game, which Walter and I, our guests, are going to play a little bit, since they did tweet.
There's a forum here, and it's pretty dead. Last post was in October 2021.
We're going to revitalize this game. I don't know. I feel like this is a little bit of a weird episode. We were pretty spicy.
Yeah, this was a serious set, but sometimes we need some serious things. There's
all I mean, after Twilight, there was like nothing serious. Sometimes we got to get our serious on.
And I think we've been in some serious moods for different reasons, and I don't think it's necessarily bad. But yes, if you want us to be degenerate, I'm sure next week we'll bring something degenerate and funny again.
Real quick shout out to my friend Savannah on the Two Fat Femmes podcast. I was talking to her about Twilight. She loves it and was annoyed that she was not on the episode in which we were doing Twilight. But she said that anyone who thinks the first Twilight movie is the best movie is just a millennial loser. And that the Zoomers are the true ones who understand Twilight and know that the later movies are better than the first one.
Well, that's such an interesting take. I didn't even know Zoomers really touched Twilight that much. So that was a good insight into the Zoomer life. Does Savannah say on God?
I don't think so.
Then I don't think Savannah can talk for Zoomers, actually.
Okay, well. All right, well, I don't think there's anything left to say except God, if you're going to watch a
God.
Movie.
FR, for real, no cap on a stack, on God.
Yes. Remember that thing that Walter just said. And also, if you're going to watch a movie, do it with the lights on.